Rural Focus around regional WA. Your voice of agriculture.
Hello and welcome to the Rural Focus podcast. My name is Troy Stockton. It's lovely to be having your company this morning and thanks for choosing the Rural Focus podcast on the Listener app, LISTNR. Here, covering things agricultural and rural issues, not just for WA, but Australia-wide. Plenty of things happening. Of course, we're all getting ready for a bumper harvest and on the way, a part of today's podcast. Very soon, we're going to catch up with Josh from the Condillan Group, see what he's up to, because I know that the November edition of Farming Ahead isn't too far away. Catch up too with Jeremy Green from West Coast Livestock, celebrating 25 years in the biz, West Coast Wool and Livestock. The Mouchet Cattle Report, how did that go yesterday? And also too, we'll speak fertiliser with you today. Phil Holt from BASF is going to join us. And well, we all like to try and get fit, really, don't we? Louise from Farm Life Fitness is going to join us. But right now from Curtin University, well, we know that there's no denying that farming can be a demanding job, compounded by maybe financial uncertainties, weather events. We know it rains one day, sunshine the next day, so we're not too sure what's going on. But what impact do these challenges have on WA farmers? Well, Curtin University's Michaela Ruthmuller is, well, she's hoping to find out, because at the moment she's doing an online mental health and wellbeing survey, and Michaela does join us this morning. Michaela, good morning.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
How's the survey coming along?
It's going well, yeah. We've had some great response from farmers in WA. Still looking for some more to take part, but yeah, it's going really well.
So how long's the survey going for?
So we're hoping to close around the end of November.
Okay.
So yeah, really encourage farmers to get involved and have their say before they get into harvest as well, because we know we're running into harvest now as well. So.
Yeah, for sure. Can you tell us what your survey results have found as yet, or are they still sort of inconclusive at this stage?
At the moment, still collecting data, so right, haven't started analysing yet.
Okay. It's what, about half an hour online survey that people can do?
Yeah, yep. It takes around 30 to 35 minutes to do it all online. Any details or anything is kept separate, so completely be all as right. Honest and open in their responses. Yeah.
So you're just trying to find or provide, I'm guessing, a deeper understanding of maybe the risk and protective factors for WA farmers?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're looking into, because obviously farmers face a lot of difficulties, and so we're looking in terms of just what is for WA farmers coming out as being the most common, the most prevalent, that sort of thing, and also not only what's the main risk factors, but like you mentioned, the main protective factors, what's working for farmers, because that's also just as important. What supports do they need?
Yep.
What could be further strengthened, that sort of stuff.
And I suppose probably in your findings, you're probably going to find out that, well, farming, as we know, sort of changes day to day, year on year.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why this survey is actually a longitudinal survey.
Yep.
So it's three surveys over 12 months.
Okay.
And the reason being for that is because we know there's so much change in farming. So we want to monitor mental health outcomes or trajectories over time and see if there's any factors that may predict changes in mental health.
Yep.
And so those factors may be, like you mentioned, weather, family stress, finances, or even some positives like social support or positive coping strategies.
So it's just for both the men and the women on the land.
Farmers, their partners, spouses, and children over the age of 18 who play an active role in the operation, the daily operations of a farming enterprise or a pastoralist enterprise.
Fantastic. So a wonderful initiative here. So where can our farmers go to do this online survey?
Yep, we've got a website, farmerwellbeing.net, and we're also on Twitter at Farmer Wellbeing and on Facebook as well at WA Farmers Mental Health and Wellbeing Study.
All right, so there you go. So farmers, when you've got a spare 5 seconds somewhere, farmerwellbeing.net is the website to go to. And don't forget, too, there's plenty of people that you can chat to as well if you're sort of doing it a little bit tough at the moment as well. But, be a part of Michaela's online survey. Farmerwellbeing.net is the website to go to. Michaela, thanks for taking the time out with us this morning. Good luck with it all, and hopefully we can chat to you when all the results are in.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you having me on.
Rural Focus around regional WA, your voice of agriculture.
Time right now to catch up with Jeremy Green from West Coast Livestock. Hello there to you, Jeremy. Of course, yesterday, the Mouchet cattle sale. How did things go there yesterday?
Yeah, mate, look, the Mouchet cattle market pen 1,812 head, down by 188 on last week in improved quality yarding, the content comprised of over 80% pastoral type. Look, in the pastoral section of the sale, the weaner steers sold at 288 to 470. cents per kilo. Weaner heifers sold from 280 to 420 cents per kilo, up 40 cents in that category. In the steers, the yearling steers sold from 328 to 400 cents, down by 10 cents. With heifers up 30 cents, they sold from 310 to 368. Local weaner steers sold from 486 to 698 cents, up 40 cents in that category. And heifers from 478 to 544 firm. Local yearling steers gained 50 cents on a better selection, with sales from 400 to 452 cents. The heifers lacked quality and sold from 272 to 438 cents, down by 80 cents. The manufacturing section, including pasture grown steers, sold from 400 to 466 cents, up 35 cents. The grown heifers at 340 to 438 cents, up by 20 cents. The pannier cows, they were mainly pasture bred, saw only the very heavy top prime heavy yielding score 3 cows sell from 330 to 342 cents firm. Most of the medium weight prime cows eased 20 cents and sold from 288 to 300 cents. Score 2 medium weight gained 15 cents and sold from 256 to 288 cents. Leaving us with the bulls. The bulls, including pastures, light defeaters and live exports, sold from 318 to 610 cents, up by 20 cents. The medium weights live export and feeders fell 30 cents on poorer selection at 302 to 372 cents, and prime heavy bulls to processors sold from 300 to 344, gaining 7 cents. So pretty reasonable sale there yesterday, mate.
Yeah, no, it sounds like another good sale there for West Coast Livestock out at Mushay yesterday, mate. So good news all round.
Yeah, no, very good news. So all right then, we'll leave yous with it.
Rural Focus, around regional WA, your voice of agriculture.
It is time right now to catch up with Phil Holt. Phil is the Technical Services Manager for ANZ with BASF Agriculture. Phil, hello to you, mate. Can you tell me a little bit about this product, Luximax? What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, thanks, Troy. Absolutely. Look, Luximax is a new herbicide from BASF that was launched in 2020 for Australian wheat growers.
Yep.
I think importantly, it's the first new mode of action for a generation to control annual ryegrass in wheat as a pre-emergent. Now, when we're talking pre-emergence, it's applied just prior to sowing, incorporated using a knife point and press wheel sowing system. And we're targeting, as per the label, a really nice, healthy 3 centimetre sowing depth. I think, you know, one of the key things for us is, you know, the industry's been looking for new modes of action, herbicides and tools to combat annual ryegrass for a long time. And we think that we've delivered that with Luximax. I think it's important to understand for your listeners there, for growers and agronomists, when we talk about a new mode of action, it's important to understand that Luximax is a Group 30 herbicide under the Crop Life Guidelines. So as a Group 30, it sits in a group all of its own. And there's no recorded resistance with annual ryegrass in Australia or globally with Rigidum species. So it's really been proven to control annual ryegrass biotypes resistant to existing chemistries that have been used for many years by wheat growers. So it's a really important new tool for growers across the wheat belt. On top of that, it's just a very good herbicide by way of its levels of control, length of control and its usability.
Phil, is herbicide resistance with the annual ryegrass, is that increasing, say, year on year?
Yeah, it's a good point, Troy. The short answer is yes.
Okay.
It is increasing.
Yep.
It's becoming more challenging. I think it does. It's important to understand that it is different across various regions where wheat is grown with respect to the levels of known resistance and the modes of action or the herbicide groups that are impacted. But again, the answer is yes. I think it really does come down sometimes to the level of testing conducted. I mean, we don't know what we don't know. You know, we've known for a long time the Group 3 products, such as trifluralin, have been developing issues. But now we can see an upward trend in chemistries that were introduced over the past 10 years or so. So we're talking about the Group 15s. Now, Group 15 was divided as Group J and K under the old crop life nomenclature. But so we're talking about products such as Boxer Gold and Sakura, but now they're all classified in together. So this known resistance with annual ryegrass, as I said, varies by region, but it's now present in most wheat-growing regions, with the most recent survey showing a significant increase in cases in South Australia, but also in Victoria.
Okay.
So the early warning signs are there for growers, start taking steps to change and adapt their ryegrass management programs. I mean, as I said there before, I think Luxamax is a great resistance management tool. It will control ryegrass biotypes resistant to both the Group 3 and the Group 15 herbicides. That's a fact. So, it's a really handy tool for growers.
So, Phil, what is the research telling growers about Luxamax as an annual ryegrass management tool?
Yeah, great question. There's some really good research happening in WA.
Yep.
Over the past 2 years, Dr. Roberto Busi there down at the University of WA has been testing herbicides both in solo applications, so standalone, and in tank mixes with other pre-emergent herbicides, existing group herbicides, really looking at the effectiveness across some 500 randomly selected ryegrass samples from WA, South Australia and Victoria. Now, based on Roberto's extensive testing and his findings, he did conclude earlier in the year, and I quote his words, that Luxamax appears as the most effective breaker of multiple resistance in 2021. Now for us here at BASF, we already knew that Luxamax's unique mode of action would control these annual ryegrass biotypes with resistance to other herbicides. However, the big benefit from Roberto's extensive work over there in WA is that he was really able to demonstrate a difference in the Luxamax's Group 30 mode of action and the difference that can make to that as a resistance management tool into the future, either as a standalone herbicide or in tank mixes. I think on the latter, when we talk about tank mixing, rotating and tank mixing herbicides aligns directly or really well with the Weed Smart Big Six strategy for helping manage herbicide resistance. We've seen some fantastic results in the past two seasons with Luxamax mixed with actives such as triolate or indeed trifluralin for grass management. But also we're in mixes with our new broadleaf weed herbicide Viraxor, which entered the market last year, which also helps boost that annual ryegrass control through its suppression effect, or as we term it, grass assist. I think, for growers, there's lots of uncertainty into the market at present. We do have good supplies of Luxamax ready to go for season 2022. We've got a good deal in place out till the end of the year, and really encourage growers to talk to their agronomist consultants or indeed the team at BASF and get the lowdown on using Luxamax next year.
Rural Focus on Triple M.
Well, it's always good to catch up with Josh from the Condillan Group, and that we are right now because the November edition of Farming Ahead is out very soon. And, in the edition, you can find all about welding tables. Yep, welding tables. Joshy, hello there to you. Why build a welding table?
Well, it's one of those things, Troy. I needed a new one. So I did a fair bit of research on how to make one really good.
Yep.
And then I thought, you know what, this would actually make a really good workshop article for the magazine. So here we are. I suppose one of the things about having a dedicated table for welding is just you can set stuff up on it. You can clamp things to the top, get things nice and square. And I tell you what, welding things at that kind of, table height is a hell of a lot more comfortable than working on the ground. And, I suppose it is a safety aspect as well. Like I've, done work on the ground welding and so forth, and you've been stuck down there and then stood up and thought, oh, gee, my back doesn't feel too good now. All of those reasons, I thought it would be good to cover how to make one and how to make a good one.
So what size should you be making these welding tables then?
Well, basically, it depends on the sort of stuff you're doing. If you're making large fabrications, you want a large table. If you're only sort of tinkering around, a small table will do. Sometimes it just depends on the size of steel you've got for the top. So for me, it was a chance to find a piece of steel that was about 2 by 1 meters, and I thought, well, that's a pretty good table size. The height of the table is a pretty important consideration. So you kind of want the top of the table to be around about 850 to 900 mils high,
right?
Around about the height of a 44-gallon drum. If you're going to put a bench vise on it, you probably want to have it a little bit lower so the bench vise is at a good height. And in my case, I put some really large heavy-duty caster wheels on it. So I made the legs even shorter, put these wheels on.
Yep.
And I'm, 6 foot one, so I wanted a height of about 900 mils. So that's what we ended up with.
Righto. Okay. And I'm guessing steel-wise, are we talking the heavy-duty kind of stuff, mate, or, any
Absolutely.
Kind of steel? Yep.
Yeah, look, if you go for something too thin for the tabletop, what happens is if you're pouring a fair bit of heat, if you're putting a bit of heat into something or if you're welding something pretty heavy on the top, that top can sag. And you spend all your time trying to brace it and support it. Like, if you see some of the commercial tables around, they're full of bracing and they're made of reasonably sort of thin stuff. Mm. So what we did, I think I would probably say 10 mil is a minimum thickness. We've used 12 mil or half inch plate, which seems to be pretty good. I've seen tables out there made of 25 mil plate on some farms. If that was me, I'd probably take that to the scrapyard and cash in for some money and buy something half the thickness. But look, one of the reasons we went for about a 12 mil thick top was because we put a clamping system into this table. So rather than having your old G clamps on the edge of the table, or often is the practice, you tack weld things to the tabletop. Hmm. We've actually drilled the table with a grid of 16 mil holes, and there's these special little clamps. I think they're called Build Pro clamps. And they just have a little, little round end on them, and they poke into these 16 mil holes, and then that allows you to clamp something in the middle of the table or wherever you want. Mm. So that's kind of how, we make the table a little bit more versatile.
All right. We are speaking with Josh from the Condinnen Group, the November edition of Farming Ahead, not too far away. It's all about welding tables, about four or five pages, mate. So with all this, how have you taken it up a notch then?
Well, look, the clamping system is probably, a real jewel in the crown.
Yep.
And what we've done is we've been really careful with marking out these holes so they're absolutely spot on location.
Yep.
So that you can get these little pegs that go into these holes. And so if you want a perfect right angle, all you've got to do is put these pegs in and then you push a steel up against the pegs and, hey, presto, you've got a right angle. Or same thing with a 45-degree angle. And also these little holes allow you to put, like, various work rests and things in. So if you want to support a piece of pipe, you can get these little rests that hold the pipe. Or if you've got a piece of angle and you want to put that on its edge, you can get V-rests. So there are a whole lot of stuff out there that suit these little holes.
Yep.
As I've said, we've put it on some pretty decent wheels. So half of the reason for that was actually just to get this table back in the workshop because it's so heavy. But the other thing is you can just wheel it around from job to job.
Yeah.
We've also put an edge on it with some holes so that you can clamp things vertically to the edge of the table. And what else have we done? Oh, we put a pretty nice little toolbox on the one side. So you've got some nice roller drawer toolbox drawers there you can pull out, and all those welding accessories fit into that. So I suppose that's how we justify writing five pages on a welding table.
No, exactly, mate. I think you're, thinking for everybody pretty much on how to do these welding tables.
Hey? Yeah, something like that. Look, I kind of like to think of, if I was going to build one, how to make it for myself, hopefully that applies to other farmers out there.
Don't miss that. It's all about welding tables. Don't blame me. I'm just a messenger. Welding tables with Joshy. When's the November edition come out, mate? Must be very soon, since we're into the last week of October.
Yeah, probably November, I reckon. So halfway through November would be.
You reckon?
Yeah, give it a few weeks.
Oh, would have thought, yes. Just in time for Chrissy. Yeah, go on. Build a welding table for Christmas. There you go.
Your wife will love it.
Exactly. Yeah, she can move it around the house and do the ironing and everything else on it too. Mate, as always, nice to catch up with you, and we'll do it again soon.
It was fun. Thanks, Joy.
Rural Focus on Triple M.
Well, we all do our best to keep fit, really, don't we? And a lady who wants us to get fit, the one and only Louise from Farm Life Fitness. Louise, hello there to you.
Hello, Troy. How are you?
Oh, I'm not bad for a Tuesday. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. It's, at the moment, it's not too bad outside, but I hear there's going to be rain coming, so bracing myself for it.
Now, I wanted to speak to you today. Now, say if you're injured, can you still exercise?
Yeah, you can. I think you, first of all, if you are injured, then you need to take that rest. Your body needs time to replenish and rebuild. But I also think that there comes a point when you have to decide what is a reason and what's an excuse. So say, for example, you have a leg injury.
Yep.
You know, for the first few days, a week or whatever, you might rest and take it easy, which is perfectly acceptable. Like I said, your body's had trauma to it, so it's doing what it can to rebuild. But after a week or so, you know, if you're still hobbling around or something like that, you've got to think to yourself, you know, well, what else can I do? I can pick up some weights and do a little bit of an upper body workout. I can just move and do some stretches. Because it's not just about the principle of exercise, the what we have to move and all this stuff, but it's for your mental well-being as well. When you're injured, you need things to keep you mentally and emotionally positive. Mm. And we know the benefits of exercise for that as well. So I would say definitely, but do it within reason of what you're capable of at that time.
So don't go and overdo it kind of thing.
No, if you've got a low body injury, don't, you know, say you're going to go for a run at the second week or something like that. And then when you are overcoming that injury, just build back up slowly. Don't think you can pick up where you left off. Quite often it might take a week or two to get back to where you were, and you've got to be kind to yourself and not get frustrated and push yourself too quickly.
So it doesn't matter if you're bedridden or lounge ridden, you can still do some exercise in some sort of way.
Look, I believe definitely, like, you know, if you're bedridden, then yes, it's going to be harder, and I'm not denying that for a second, but even if it's just doing some arm movements and stuff like that, getting that blood pumping around, waking up those muscles a little bit, waking up all the brain and everything like that. Like, there is something you can do at some point, even if it's doing the real basics like working on core engagement and core activation. You know, it's still going to serve a purpose. And again, it gives you a bit of purpose while you're waiting around for an injury to heal.
All right. So good news there from Louise from Farm Life Fitness. Now, of course, the website, people can go there.
Yep, farmlifefitness.com.au, and have a look what we're all about, for sure.
All right. Anything else before I let you go this morning?
No, not at all. Just have a good day and move when you can.
Rural Focus around regional WA, your voice of agriculture.
Well, there are a couple of sales happening at the end of this week. So if you've got a couple of spare dollars hidden somewhere, to tell us about these sales from Nutrient, hello to Craig Walker. Mate, you've got a sale Thursday and Friday this week.
Yeah, on Thursday we've got at 1 p.m. on Auctions Plus, we've got the maternal ewe sale. It's a special sale being put together by our crew, and it's basically what there's a lot of shedding type sheep in there. There's 7,500 ewes in there, and made up of about 1,000 doonies, 1,100 sams. But what is interesting and where all the money is at the moment, there's 2,500 ultra-wide ewes on there,
okay.
950 white Dorpers, 120 Van Roys, wow. 250 black Dorpers, and 350 white Suffolk ewe lambs. And now, it's a great opportunity for people who are thinking about getting into a new breed or trying something, and particularly the way that this ultra-wide market is going on Auctions Plus. You know, we've seen some massive sort of queues there for ewes. It's a great opportunity for people who want to try something different if you're not in livestock to get online and have a bit of a look. The catalogue's already up,
okay,
so people can have a look at it and go from there, mate.
So they just go to Auctions Plus, mate?
Yeah, just go on to Auctions Plus or contact Roy Addis. He's down running. He's actually coordinating the sale, and okay. Roy's down in the Langer, of course, and one of the legendary footy coaches down there. He's coordinating. There's some very, very good sheep in there, ranging from new lambs to about 3-year-olds. So, yeah, it's really worthwhile having a look. And as I said, the catalogue's up, the videos are up already online, so you can have a look.
So you said, what, 1 o'clock Thursday afternoon? Is that 1 o'clock WA time?
1 o'clock WA time, yes.
All right,
yes.
All right. So,
put on now and have a look. And if you want some more details, give Roy a call or just have a look online and you'll see some of those beautiful young ewes that have been presented on Thursday.
All right, so you got one sale Thursday. What's the one on Friday, mate?
The one on Friday is our monthly store sales in Newsham. And they've been going absolute gangbusters. You know, that market for young heifers has been very strong. There's been some really good young lines of steers going in there as well, and good numbers as well. Yep. So this week we got around about 2,300 that have been prepared for sale. There's about 200 local steers ranging from Simmentals and Angus, about 100 local heifers in there. In the pastoral section, which, you know, I know it scares a few people away, but by golly, we've got some absolute crackers in there. We started, got some beautiful steers in there. We've got Andrew Glenn Cattle Co. They've got some really, really good steers. All those young cattle will be mouthed, so you know exactly what you're getting. And most of them are flatbacks. They're either drought masters or they're cross sort of cattle, Santa Cross. And there's about 1,500 steers, and there's also a bit over 1,000 heifers coming in, and of course they've got their favourite coming in, about a metre there, Kalala Pastoral Co. They've got about 140 young heifers there, and they're keenly sought after. The Tony Beef have got some really good heifers coming in that have been down off the farm for a while. Andrew Green Cattle Co. has got 300 really good heifers. There's some beautiful little white face heifers coming up, and of course there's about 300 young bulls and these are all quiet too, so don't be scared of those. They can be cut and turned into steers.
Yep.
They can be put aside for live export, and their weight range is from about 120 kilos to 350. So, you know, you've got plenty of opportunity there to get hold of some cattle and tuck them away.
Yeah, all right. What time is that sale from, mate?
That's at 10 o'clock WA time. It also will be interfaced on Auctions Plus.
All right.
And the catalogue will be up on Thursday night, so you can have a bit of a look at that. So if you're in the USA and you want to have a little sneaky look before Thursday afternoon, you can go and have a look or just talk to the boys. Come along to the sale yard there in the USA and have a look. But I guarantee you won't be disappointed.
Rural Focus. Around regional WA. Your voice of agriculture.
Well, from the 11th of October, new legislation has come in that quad bikes will now have to be sold with rollover protection. Now, a lot of farmers, not just in WA, but across Australia, well, they were never asked before this legislation was passed. Now, there's a petition out at the moment. You can go to change.org. Quad bikes, due to the new ACCC legislation opposed. Something like around 30,000 have already signed it. Have you signed it? Well, I'm sure you're not too happy about it, especially if you are a farmer with this new ACCC legislation, a man who really needs no introduction. From the Honda shop in the Perth metro area, Mr. Eddie Peters joins me today. Eddie, hello to you. What can you tell us about this petition?
Okay, so basically what's happened was that this legislation was put in place to stop quads being sold from the 11th of October this year, unless they had this thing called rollover protection fitted to it, right? So what's happened is the manufacturers, the major manufacturers like Honda, Yamaha, Suzuki, Kawasaki and Polaris have all tested these devices and they don't think they're safe at all. So they refuse to let their dealers fit them because they just fear, you know, they're going to end up in the courts all the time with a lot of litigation. Because, you know, if you happen to roll over a quad bike with one of these bars sticking up in the air, it's very likely it'll come over and hit you in the back of the head or something anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there wasn't a lot of thought. There also, the worst part about this whole thing was that the ACCC, National Farmers Federation, never actually interviewed farmers, the very people who use these products to get around their properties. And also for mustering and, you know, whether it's sheep or cattle or whatever.
Yep, yep.
And they use them for carting tools around and all those sorts of things. And as you know, if you ride or drive anything in a stupid manner, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah. So more or less you're saying farmers don't want this.
But yeah, look, most farmers that we speak to have already said if they had one of these devices on the quad when they bought one, the first thing they'd do when they got home would be to unbolt
take it,
take it off.
Yeah.
And look, there's more people killed on horses every year than there has ever been on a quad, right? So, yeah, it's just this whole thing was a knee-jerk reaction and not thought of. And because it wasn't presented to Parliament, most of all our federal policies didn't even know that it happened because just one politician, Michael Sukar, was able to rubber stamp this without taking it to Parliament. So,
there's a petition out at the moment. What's the petition about?
Yeah, the petition is just the petition is about getting as many farmers as possible and their families and everyone to sign this petition, right, so that they can get the word mandatory removed from the legislation so that the farmer can choose if he wants one fitted or not. And that would mean that, because now we've got all these major manufacturers have all pulled out of Australia. They will not let their dealers sell these things with those quad overhead protection things on them. What they're saying is remove the word mandatory. The farmer comes in, wants to buy a quad bike, says, yes, I want one fitted. Well, you know, he can go and get one fitted, right?
Yep.
And that'll be something you'll sign for. Or no, I don't want one fitted. We'll sign that as well, you know. So, and that's the best way to deal with this. So, but, you know, with that many signatures, I mean, there's enough signatures there to change a government. But, you know, the pollies won't like that at all. They need to have been involved in this whole thing.
Yep. So you've got farmers coming in to you, Eddie, saying?
All the time. Yep. They're all coming in and they're just saying it was the most stupidest thing that ever happened.
Yep.
You know, and some of the examples they give of a quad being rolled over, if you saw the video they did,
yep.
It wouldn't matter if it was a quad or anything, but...
Yep.
They're just using that to justify what they've done, but it should be a farmer's thing. And one of the things that comes to my mind is around Australia, there's nearly 500 little small dealerships in country towns. They employ locals.
Right.
They survive on the sale, servicing, parts of these quads. They've given young guys apprenticeships and girls apprenticeships. You know, they can't survive. Won't survive.
No.
You know, it was really, really stupid. It'd be great if we can just get this across the board and then let the farmer decide. It's got to be his decision or her decision, you know, they want to put on, and we will see the manufacturers then come back into Australia. Without that, they won't. It's the end of the quad, so, yeah.
Alrighty, so there you go. So if you'd like to sign that petition, already close to 30,000 people have already signed it already. So is there a cut-off time to people to...
They can just keep on doing it. So there is we've got like a QR code. If anybody wants to contact us, or I'm just thinking of the quad bikes. There is a quad bike link that probably need to. I think it's on our website actually. If you go to Honda Shop, hondashop.com.au.
Okay.
And it's on there, and you can just click on it and get your family to let the politicians know that this is just not on. You can't just do these things, you know. Unfortunately, it wasn't the Polly's decision. So
no, exactly. Yeah.
We can't say that in this particular case, but they need to be involved now.
But it just seems weird that, as you say, the farmers were never asked about the legislation.
That's it. Yeah. And they're very people that use them, you know.
Exactly.
So,
All right.
No, it'd be good if we can get something happening, that's for sure. But...
To find the petition, just go to change.org or probably up at the Honda shop as well. As I said, already close to 30,000 people have signed it already. Eddie Peters, thanks for your time today.
Not a problem. Good on you. Thanks for that. Appreciate your support.
And that is it for today's edition of the Rural Focus podcast. Thank you very much for choosing the Rural Focus podcast. Of course, we'll be back to do it all again for you tomorrow. And don't forget too, Rural Focus, you can hear it on Triple M between 9 and 11 weekday mornings.